So Orpheus sings to the mob and calms them, and they open the gates to Hades for Orfeo to enter. And in the COC's production this spring, the role of Orfeo will be sung by American countertenor Lawrence Sazzo, and he'll be the focus of a future podcast once we get the rehearsals rolling. We're hoping to interview him. He made his COC debut as Oberon in Benjamin Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream a couple seasons ago. Mm-hmm. We invite you, if you have any questions for Lawrence, please let us know on our Facebook page or through Parlando, our blog. Euridice will be sung by Isabel Byrick-Darien, a well of soprano here in Toronto and around the world. And she was just here most recently in the winter performances of The Magic Flute as Pamina. Mm-hmm. And it's a very small cast, this opera. The chorus is important, of course. The third role, there's only three, really, of Amore, the cheeky little love god, is sung by ensemble studio soprano Amber Braid, who really made a great impression as the Queen of the Night in the ensemble's performance of Magic Flute this spring.
That's right.
Harry Bickett, who was here for last season's Idomeneo, returns to the COC to conduct. And Robert Carson will be directing his production from Lyric Opera of Chicago. And this production, when it premiered, garnered great acclaim. Opera News called it, for example, a vivid demonstration of why this exquisite work has endured in the international repertory for centuries. And the Chicago Sun-Times said, "The results are magical, a revelation on various levels." And the Chicago Tribune remarked, "Less is more in this uncluttered Orpheus. Lyric production brings stark beauty, poetry to a timeless tale." Mm. So it is, at least from the photos anyway, it looks like the production sort of takes on what Gluck was trying to achieve in just sort of paring things down, keeping it very simple, but very beautiful.
And elemental, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a very strong sense of, you know, the earth.
Right.
And especially as he descends down into hell.
And the director himself, Robert Carson, said of his production and of the opera, this piece focuses entirely on the power of love and its ability through music to penetrate the mystery of death and even bring the dead back to life. These are the essential, eternal, unsolvable mysteries of life.
That's very moving.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the reasons we enjoy opera and love to go see these pieces that are hundreds of years old, and yet they still speak to us today.
Well, back to the story. Orfeo finds himself in a verdant setting, Elysium, the land of blessed heroes. The music we'll hear now is best known as the Dance of the Blessed Spirits. Just after that, we'll hear the start of Orfeo's aria, Che puro ciel, what pure skies, and you can hear the gentle breezes and the song of the birds. It's just such expressive music.
Thank you.
Orfeo cannot rest until he's reunited with his wife. A group of heroes and heroines approach him and tell him that she's already returning to life. She's brought forth, and there's a sense of her literally maybe having been asleep. You know, she's a little bit out of it, literally sort of feeling the life come back into her. But without a word or a look, he takes her hand and starts to lead her out of Elysium. Now, at this point, I have to say it's incredibly frustrating to select just a small group of highlights of this podcast, and I was renting my robes and tearing my hair. I just cannot believe, and it's been a while since I heard the music, how beautiful it is and how delightful. And there's only about 90 minutes of it. So I would love to have played the whole thing, but there are a couple of extremely well-known parts of Orfeo, but all of it is such a perfect form. It's sublimely beautiful and deeply engrossing, and I just can't wait to hear the whole thing on stage. So we're going to hear another excerpt here. Euridice is in a daze. She asks if she's living again. As she regains her strength, her joy overwhelms her, but then she becomes very confused as her husband won't look at her, and she can only assume that he doesn't love her. And she says to him, a peaceful death would be preferable to this unhappy life, a life without Orfeo's love. And we'll hear her aria now, Che Fiero Momento, sung by Sylvia McNair, and the recitative that comes before it, in which you'll hear that telling orchestral accompaniment that, as we said earlier, was a hallmark of Gluck's opera reform.
Qua vita è questa mai che a vivere incomincio?
Orfeo cannot bear to hear his wife's anguish, so he turns to look at her, and then, as was decreed by the gods, she dies. He's devastated, and this is the moment when he sings certainly the most well-known aria in the opera, Che farò senza Euridice, and we'll hear it again sung by Derek Lee Reagan.
Respond.
Orfeo cannot live without Eurydice. He declares that he will kill himself, but just in time, Amore reappears and tells him that he has suffered enough for love and no more sacrifice will be demanded. Amore brings Eurydice back to life, and the husband and wife are joyfully reunited. Around this, the shepherd and shepherdesses dance in celebration of the happy couple and join with Amore in leading praises of love. So it's a happy ending after all.
Hooray!
But...
Well, the happy ending of Gluck's Orfeo et Eurydice actually harkens back to the tradition much loved among opera goers at the time, and that was the happy ending.
Right.
So in that regard, you know, Gluck gave the audience what they were expecting. In the original Greek myth, things didn't go so well. In the original myth, Orpheus cannot look at his wife until they're both out of Hades, but he's so eager to look at her that as soon as he steps over the threshold, he turns around, but she's still inside, and she dies, and there's no second chance. He's heartbroken, and he refuses to fall in love with another woman, but instead takes a series of young male lovers to, I guess, assuage his grief. An angry group of spurned women, who are followers of Dionysus, literally tear him apart. And there's a famous scene in the myth as his dismembered head bobs its way down the Hebrus River, still singing its beautiful songs. So it's a very...
It's very disturbing.
Very disturbing. We love our happy ending in the opera. There are about 60 operas approximately written on the subject of Orpheus, of course, most of them lost. Most of those operas are written during the 17th and 18th centuries. Gluck's is the most well-known. I think it's time for a new one with the original Greek myth intact.
I think
that would be very intriguing.
I think modern audiences could handle that.
Unless it's already been done, I'm just not aware of it. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, we'll check it out. I know there's a Philip Glass opera based on the myth. I wouldn't be surprised if he stuck with the original story.
We'll look into it. Well, we've come to the end of our podcast. I could have listened to the whole opera happily. For more information about the recording we've been listening to and the COC's production of Orfeo ed Eurydice, please visit our website at coc.ca, where you can also purchase tickets and this recording online. The recording we listened to is on the Decca label. John Elliott Gardner conducted the English Baroque soloists in the Monteverdi Choir. Derek Lee Reagan was Orfeo. Sylvia McNair was Eurydice. And Cynthia Seddon sang Amore. This recording was from 1993 and, as I said before, is available for purchase at the Opera Shop during performances this spring at the COC. We'd love to hear from you. Please check out our podcast updates on the COC's Facebook page and let us know what you think or ask us any questions you have or, as we said, would love suggestions for future podcasts. This is Jana Wichlow with Gianmarco Segato. Please join us again in this continuing series of podcasts sponsored by Decca, the Opera label.